Okay. Morning, everyone. Sarah, please take a seat. Before we begin, can I just ask everyone to turn off their mobile phones and or on vibrate? And the reason that I'm doing it especially today is because I'm going to talk about it a little bit later on. It'll be embarrassing if it goes off. So, welcome everyone to a new Bina year, 2013. It's been a while. I haven't seen many of you from before I went to overseas for my son's wedding. And I just wanted to first of all begin with thanking everyone for all their good wishes and their mazel tov. It was really beautiful, thank God. And we should all be blessed only with simcha and nachas. And same time also welcome to some of our newcomers. And we're ready to go. So this term's topic is called precious moments. Effective strategies to manage your time and make every day meaningful. I think what we need to do today is spend a few minutes defining the topic. And the reason that I say that is the following. Stephen Covey, I've mentioned him before, the architect of the famous model of the seven habits of highly effective people, in his introduction, in his book, and in his audio tapes and videos, he makes a very, very important point. And he talks about the research that he's done on human behavior and human character, and he talks about the phenomenon that over the last number of decades, or probably in the last century, there was an unfortunate shift from what he calls the character ethic to the personality ethic. What that means is that people have a goal to be happy, people have a goal to be productive, people have a goal to be successful, but it all depends what the foundation of those goals are. And it used to be that the foundation of success or the foundation of happiness was a good character. And that sort of shifted. In other words, if you had a good internal character and a good internal makeup of emotions and cognition, etc., that would then result, hopefully, in good practices, and good practices resulting in... Come in. There's, at the back there, there's plenty of children. And good practices resulting in success and productivity and achievements. But what happened was, there was a bit of a and that's what we call the character ethic. What happened was there was a bit of a shift from what we call the character ethic to the personality ethic, which means that people started using superficial quick fixes like an aspirin for a symptom to sort of achieve those things that they want to achieve. In other words, it was more on the outside, it was more on the superficial open part of their character to get what they need, no matter what the means are, no matter how they get there. And the kind of analogy he gives, the beautiful analogy he gives, is a tree. And every tree, as you would know, of course, has lots of roots underneath the ground that cannot be seen. Often the roots are perhaps as big as the tree or even larger. And we know that a beautiful, majestic tree that has very, very bad and rotten roots looks beautiful, looks strong, but within time it will fall down and nothing will come of it. And in his analogy, he talks about the branches being a symbol of functionality, a symbol of success, a symbol of practical sort of living, whereas the roots are a symbol of the foundations, the character, the morals, the values that guide these principles, that guide these practical successes. Right? So therefore he says that when he designed the seven habits, he chose to use what he calls the inside-out model rather than the outside-in model, that he would begin with what he calls a personal victory, which means that we have to begin with working on ourselves, with defining what our values are, defining what our principles are, and then use that good character to then dictate and to influence the way we behave, the way we succeed, the way we achieve happiness, the way we reach those goals that we've set out for ourselves. There's a book on time management, actually, which I'm going to use a little bit in this series. It's called Time... I don't like the title. It's called Time Management for Entrepreneurs by Dan Kennedy. Now, as I say, I will use the book throughout. There's some good ideas there and some good tips, but I was reading through it and largely unimpressed by the book because I think what it is, it's a very outside-in model. In other words, the focus is the success, the focus is the productivity, the focus is getting what he wants to get, and it makes no difference what the character behind it is. The foundation, the values seem to be of little relevance, and the more important thing is getting to the outside, getting to the success. Just to give you an example, he talks about, and we're going to talk about this on a practical level, he talks about not returning phone calls so quickly, because, you know, we have this obsession, and it is a problem. People think they have to return a phone call immediately, otherwise the world might come to an end. The person probably won't be able to survive if I don't call them back within the next 3 minutes, so I stop whatever I'm doing. Right? It's very, very bad time management practice. But he takes it to an extreme, and he has this model, and he runs a very successful business, where he takes his time, and he takes a few days to get back to people, and he has one line there which says it all. He says, not everyone is always happy with me, but I haven't lost a cent. Now, if the focus is not to lose a cent, then he's right, then it's a good practice, right? But life is a lot more complicated than that. Come in this room. This place is here if you want. Life is a lot more complex than that. Life has many, many more components than just not losing a cent, right? In fact, part of the, and we're going to explore this a lot in the next coming weeks, part of the art of making each day meaningful, part of the art of managing our time properly, is to understand how to bring the various components in our life together. You've seen the sign outside and you've seen the emails. Binah has a theme, this term of syncing, and it's very much like that. It's about bringing everything in our lives into sync. And a critical part of time management is learning how to prioritize and how to give priority to the different parts of our life in an effective and successful and practical way. But life is not only about not losing a cent. Life is about relationships. Life is about values. Life is about morals. And when you engage in a time management practice like he does, which might be very effective for one component of life, it might be very effective in his business, but it might not display any degree of empathy or caring or concern for another human being. It might not build relationships or nurture relationships. That is a very outside-in model of time management and not an inside-out. So, I give you this introduction because I want to define sort of our journey for the next 6 weeks. And in the next 6 weeks, we are going to look, and I'm going to try to be as very practical as possible, and I think time management is a great journey to go on and to explore. And we're going to try and give a lot of different practical strategies on how to manage our time better, how to prioritize, how to minimize interruptions, how to be effective, how to be successful, how to get the most out of a day, right? But what we're going to do is, we're going to do it as we always do, in context of looking at the values that govern good time management, that govern these good practices. In other words, we're going to look at time management, but in keeping with our Thursday morning focus, we're going to do it in the context of personal growth. Time management is just another part, another component of a person growing as a human being. It requires a lot of intrinsic and internal shifts and mindset shifts and values that we need to explore, we need to implement in order to manage our time better, but we need to do that in that way of an inside-out model to look at the value of what we're trying to do and how it makes us a better person, not just how it reaches our goals and makes us do more in less time. That's not the goal. The goal is to become a more meaningful person and to get the best meaning and the best value out of each day. So what we're going to do today is we're going to have a look at some foundations. I'm just looking at that clock. It's interesting time management that we started today. That clock, the battery's gone and it's not working. So, I normally, as I'm talking, I use that as a, it's in good direction over there. So I'm going to have to look at my watch today. Okay, maybe I'll take it off and do it this way. By the way, you know, as I was thinking about time management, I think I've shared this with you before. But I'm always reminded of a little shul. Actually, it wasn't such a little shul. It was a large shul that I used to go to as a kid. Growing up in Johannesburg, a lot of my friends belonged to they used to call it the Agas Yeshurun in Hunter Street, so those remember Yovel a bit. It was a German shul, Yakashi Yitten. It was people who came from Frankfurt mainly. And they were incredible in terms of punctuality. I mean, you've never seen anything like it. So I always remember this example, because I had a lot of friends and I used to go there sometimes on a Shabbos afternoon or sometimes even Shabbos morning. I'll never forget the signs that used to be outside on the billboard. And they used to have a sign that went something like this, that, you know, Shabbos afternoon you have mincha. So that used to be like, mincha will be at 5:17. But the joke was, it wasn't just a 5:17 on the billboard. 5:11, the shul was empty. 5:13, it started to fill up. Right? 5:15, it started to fill up even more. 5:16, that's not a joke, by the way. 5:16, the chazan would be at the front of the shul, looking at the second hand of the clock, ready to roll. Everyone was packed. Everyone was in their seat. 5:17, boom, we begin. Right? I'm not sure. That's right, exactly. I'm not sure that's the time management we're going to explore exactly, but nevertheless, it was an amazing discipline. Okay, so what I want to do today is, I want to do two things. First of all, I want to look at some foundations, some of those values, some of the foundations that are necessary to engage in if we actually want to look at time management. I want to look at some of the ideas, the concepts behind the concept of managing our time and this idea of the title Precious Moments and what does that mean. And then have some practical tips towards the end, start with something practical and give you some homework. In this series, we're going to leave you with homework every week, hopefully. And they will test you when you come back. No, just kidding. I won't do that. Okay. So, managing our time, not wasting time, getting things done, seems to be a issue which many, many people talk about. So what are the issues? What's the difficulties in managing time? I know we don't always do this, but let's get some suggestions. What's the issues? What are the problems that people experience in managing our time?
Getting distracted.
Oh, distractions are very, very important. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Better?
Yeah.
Okay. Distractions, yes.
Putting too many things on our schedule.
Ah.
Unrealistic.
Thank you. Unrealistic expectations. By the way, I'm doing this also to be practical. I think over the next few weeks, I'm gonna write this down afterwards and address a lot of these. I mean, some of them is part of the plan, but some of them would be good to actually get a sense of what people feel.
Rules.
Sorry?
Rules. Schedules and things that are there out of our control.
Okay, out of control, let's say outside schedules, right?
Yeah.
Like getting the kids to school on time.
Right? Not privatizing, not putting them in the order.
Priority, very good. Priority. By the way, I can't scroll, so please excuse me.
It's organized.
Okay, organization. So. Yes?
Like one becomes very tired if one has too much to do.
Ah, fatigue. Very important. Excellent one. Because it's an excellent one, because we see a lot of times people don't manage their time properly because they're trying to manage their time too well.
Or lack of planning.
Planning, yeah.
Lack of planning.
What
about
control?
We're going to talk about control today a little bit. Okay. So these are excellent. These are certainly some of the, there's more, but these are some of the issues that come up in terms of managing our time. We find people are always complaining, they get to the end of the day and I didn't get things done and I sort of, and things happen out of my control, and it's a whole mishkebab and a cholent, and we kind of get a sense of frustration. Right? So I wanted to sort of try and take away that sense of frustration and sort of look at strategies of actually getting more value out of what we do and giving it more meaning. But as I said, let's go back a second. Let's go all the way back. Let's begin with a few foundations, as I said, beginning with some critical thoughts in the Jewish way of thinking, in the Jewish perspective. And let's start all the way from the beginning. All the way from the beginning means that fundamental to Jewish thought is that we live in this planet for a purpose. I think we need to start with that, right? In other words, God put us here. We are divinely designed. We are created in the divine imprint, as we've spoken about many times. We work with ourselves, and we are put here to work with the world around us to become better people, to bring sanctity, to bring holiness into the world. There's a concept that Hasidic philosophy talks about a lot called Dira B'Tachtonim, which means that in the works of Kabbalah we learn that God desired, he had this desire for whatever reason, which is perhaps unknown to us, but he created the world because he had a desire to live in a physical environment. In other words, he had this desire that he would create a physical, finite, mundane world, and that would become his home. In other words, we would reveal him here, we would make him be welcome here, we would bring his presence into the world, and but to do that, we need to make him welcome within ourselves. In other words, we become the microcosm of that home, and through that, we then influence the outside world, and we make the world a better place. And hopefully, after many, many, many years of a good long life, when we leave this planet, we have contributed to making this world a better place, and a place where God feels more comfortable. Now, of course, this is a subject of a very, very long discussion, but that's encapsulating it very, very quickly. Now, when we talk about that, let's talk about the definition of creation. We talk about that God created the world. What does it mean that he created the world? God is infinite, the works of Kabbalah tell us. And the greatness of creation is or was that an infinite God created a finite world. What is the definition of the created world? So one of the important things to understand in the context of our discussion is that the definition of the created world is both time and space. In other words, we are taught that prior to creation, time and space didn't exist. God transcends time, he transcends space. Both time and space are finite. Both time and space have a beginning, have an end. God is infinite, God is transcendent, God is omnipotent, omnipresent, and therefore he transcends the whole concept of time and space. But when he created a world, when he created that finite physical world where he wishes to live and he wishes for us to sanctify it and to bring meaning and purpose into that existence, when we refer to that existence, we're referring to both time and place. In fact, on a very deep philosophical and Kabbalistic discussion, there's a concept that time and space were both the first simultaneous creations, but yet time kind of preceded space in a way. Because space means, when something has a space, the physical space of the world means it begins here and ends there. For something to begin in one place and to end another place, there has to be a sense of time. There's a beginning and an end. As soon as you say beginning and an end, there's a concept of time. So when we talk about making ourselves or making the world, elevating, sanctifying, making the world a better place, we're talking about both time and space. Now this is an important concept because when you look at the Torah, for example, you will notice that the mitzvot, the commandments that God gave us in the Torah, which is the one vehicle through which we bring holiness into existence, you will notice that many of them govern space and many of them govern time. Right? So for example, when we talk about space, we're talking about physical objects like mezuzah or tefillin or Shabbos candles or making our home an environment, creating a shul, building a temple. These things are all mitzvot that have to do with space. But equally so, we find in the Torah so many commandments, so many mitzvot that govern time. In fact, when the Jews left Egypt, and we always refer to the story of Exodus as good models, but when the Jews left Egypt, the very first mitzvah they were given as a nation was not a mitzvah to do with space, it was a mitzvah to do with time. The very first mitzvah that the Jewish people received as a nation, there was a couple of mitzvot before they were given to Abraham and Isaac as individuals, but the first mitzvah they were given as a nation was the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, which is to sanctify time, to make the first day of every month holy, and it's called Kiddush HaChodesh, which means sanctifying time, sanctifying the cycle of time. And the message in that very first mitzvah is that time is sacred. That just as God gives us a world to protect, just as he gives us an environment to elevate, to sanctify, and to make better, and to make it a better environment, so too he gives us minutes, he gives us seconds, he gives us time to accomplish. He gives us the cycle of time to elevate, to sanctify, to protect, and to hold precious. And therefore this concept of Rak Rosh Chodesh, we have Shabbat is a mitzvah of time. It's about sanctifying a day, seventh day. We have the mitzvah between Passover and Shavuot, Pesach and Shavuot, called counting the Omer, which is a very interesting mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that has no rituals to it. It's a mitzvah that is, by definition, to count every day for 49 days. And many commentaries talk about the lesson in that mitzvah as being a mitzvah that teaches us the preciousness of time, teaches us that every day is something. And therefore the message in all of that, all of those concepts is that just as space is sacred, just as space needs to be protected, so does time, and that every minute we have is another opportunity. So the first foundation, the perspective that we need to build is that time is precious. Precious moments. In other words, that every day, every time, every hour that we are given is a gift from God, and every hour that we are given is given to us to achieve something. Now, that something might be, it doesn't mean, this is not meant to be a pressurizing thing. In other words, that something might be recreation. That something might be schmoozing with someone. That something might be relaxing. It might not be. It might be working hard. That's a priority thing, and that's the balance of the various components of life, which we're going to explore in the next few weeks. But nevertheless, the perspective has to be is that every time, every moment, every hour, we achieve something, and that we can look back and say, this is what I achieved in that hour, and it's not wasted. A wasted moment is something that's very difficult to get back. I think I've repeated this before, but my grandfather, a blessed memory, shared with me once an example. He always, when he would talk about the mitzvah of counting the Omer, he would say that back in Poland there was two kinds of calendars. There was a desk calendar, which is something like we have today as well, which is every day has a page, and you tear off every page at the end of the day. And then there was a wall calendar where every day had a square. And he said, "What was the this was the model he always used?" He was actually a very, very great time manager. What he said, "What was the model he would always use?" He said, "The two calendars are like this. The desk calendar works that when you finish a day, you tear it off, you crumple it up, and you throw it in the garbage, and the day's gone. The wall calendar," he says, "each one has a box. When the day is finished, in order to make a sign for yourself that we're holding by the next day, you tick the day." And he'd always say, "They're tog bleibt." In other words, the day remains. The day's still there. The day hasn't gone away. The day hasn't been thrown in the garbage. It's not there in time anymore, but it's there because something has been accomplished. It's there because something has happened. I've achieved. I have what to show for those moments, for those seconds, for that day. We have a very interesting midrash based on the kiddush that we make on Friday night. The kiddush that we make on Friday night talks about the 6 days of creation and that God rested on the seventh, which is the introduction to Shabbat. And if you notice carefully, if you know a little bit of Hebrew, if you look in the English, you will notice a very strange terminology. We know that the whole concept of Shabbat is based on that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Resting is also part of accomplishing. But it says there that Vayechal Elokim b'yom hashvi'i, God finished creating on the seventh day. And the famous commentator Rashi points out, and he quotes a midrash, he says, "What do you mean? The whole principle is that he didn't create on the seventh day. The whole idea is that he created only on the six days, and he rested on the seventh, which gives us the model of Shabbat." So what does it mean when the Chumash, when the Torah tells us that Vayechal Elokim, God finished on the seventh day? What does that mean? So he quotes a fascinating midrash, and he says like this: the reason that it says this is to teach us what happened. See, the way time works, and this is a whole other discussion, but if you look at the day, at the end of the day, we've got this twilight zone, which means the sun goes down, and it's not properly night. And there's a halachic issue. There's a 20 minutes or so where we actually don't know if it belongs to today or belongs to tomorrow. You know, the Jewish day starts in the night, but exactly when night kicks in is a bit difficult. So us human beings, that we cannot really tell, so we have to be careful. We have to create boundaries and precautions, so therefore we start Shabbat a little bit early. In fact, this extends afterwards into the practice where women who light Shabbos candles, if you look in the calendars, you'll see it's actually 18 minutes before sunset to bring it early, to get ready, so we don't blur the lines. But God, on the other hand, God knows exactly when Shabbat starts. He knew exactly when Friday comes to an end and the Shabbat day begins. So therefore, at the very last moment, and this is recorded in Pirkei Avot as well, in the Ethics of the Fathers, he created a whole bunch of things. And so much so that we have a famous list of 10 things that God created at the very last moment, at just the moment before Shabbat came in, where to the human eye it appeared that he was still creating on Shabbat, but really he wasn't, it was Friday. It just looked like it was Shabbat because he was very concise. famous thing. It says, for example, the certain very special things were created Friday afternoon at the last moment. It's not for now to go into the whole discussion, but for example, the grave of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was considered very special, that was specially designated on Friday afternoon, and so on and so forth. There's a whole list. But the concept, so what did God do that for? What, he couldn't, he had to rush, you know, like everyone rushes on Friday afternoon. He couldn't get organized. But the reason that he did that was, and that he recorded in the Torah, that he actually finished to what us looked like seventh day, but it wasn't really the seventh day, is to teach us that when there's an opportunity to accomplish, you have to chaparayim. You have to grab the opportunity. When there's an opportunity to create, to accomplish something, it's time that we cannot waste. It doesn't matter how small that time is. It doesn't matter how minute that moment is. A moment is an opportunity. When that moment comes to an end, the opportunity is then different. When that moment came to an end, it was Shabbat. Shabbat has a different opportunity. Shabbat has a different accomplishment. But when there was a moment to create, he created it. There was one time that the secretary of the Lubavitcher Rebbe came in to tell him that there was some issue, and that Shacharit, the morning prayer, which was supposed to start at 9 a.m., wasn't going to be beginning at 9 a.m., so the secretary said, it's going to be beginning, today we have to, there's a problem, I don't know exactly what the issue was, but Shacharit, the morning prayer, is going to begin at 9:10, 9:15. So the Rebbe said, no problem, I just need to know which one, 9:10 or 9:15. I could be flexible, but I just need to know, is it 9:10 or 9:15, so I know how to plan. There was a very famous rabbi in Yerushalayim, his name was Rav Dengus. And he once made a siyum. A siyum means he once made a party, a celebration, for completing the entire Talmud. Now, just to give you a little bit of an idea, the Talmud is 2,000 double-sided pages of very, very complex, in-depth halachic analysis, right? There's a program which people do today called Daf Yomi, which means they do a page a day, a double page a day, and it takes 7.5 years to complete. That's if you do it in a shallow way. If you do it properly and you really sort of do it in depth, then it takes longer. Anyway, this Rav Dengus once made a celebration, and he called together some friends, and there's a tradition that when you finish, particularly if you finish the whole Talmud, even if you finish one section, but if you finish the entire Talmud, you make a celebration. So he called together all his friends, and he made this tremendous celebration for finishing the Talmud. A few months later, he made another celebration for finishing the Talmud. He called together friends again, and he called another party and he celebrated once again the completion of the Talmud. So of course, some of his friends and colleagues or disciples, they couldn't contain themselves. They say, Rabbi, that was pretty good. How do you manage to finish the Talmud in 3 months? He says, no, I didn't finish the Talmud in 3 months. In fact, he says, this completion that I'm making now took me years and years and years. Why? He said, because, in fact, he says, this one, this siyum, this celebration is the most precious of all to me. He says, because the one I made a few months ago is because I have a daily... Hey, Sue, come here. Sue, right here. The one I made a few months ago, he says, that was the result of my daily program. Every day I learn a little bit, and it takes me years, and after a while I finish. He said, the one I made tonight was a whole different one. The one I made tonight was like this, he says. When I was all the way back in yeshiva, when I was a student in yeshiva, so I lived in a dormitory, and every day we would get meals. And to get the meals, you had to stand in line. Now, those of you who learned in yeshiva, or those of you who have learned in yeshiva, or seminary, whatever, you know it, or a dormitory, you know what it is to stand in line for food. It's a little bit annoying. So he said, I stand in line. I realized after a few days, it used to frustrate me because essentially it was a waste of time. There's no other way to get the food. If you want to eat, you've got to stand in line. But I realized that it's 5 minutes standing in line every single meal, but it's 5 minutes that are useful 5 minutes. I could do something in those 5 minutes. I'm doing nothing. In other words, if a person is relaxing or resting or enjoying themselves or watching a show, whatever, that's one thing. But to do nothing is a problem. He was trained that you can't just do nothing. And we get the approach that time is there to use. It's an opportunity. So he said, I decided I'm going to bring myself a little volume of the Talmud. And every time I have to stand in line, I'll study a little bit of Talmud. When I left yeshiva, he says, I continued that practice. So whenever I had to wait in line for a bus or for a train or for a ticket or waiting around for someone who was late or whatever the case is, I had my 5-minute Talmud study. It's been years and years. And he said, last week, I finished the entire Talmud. This is the best seal, this is the best celebration I'm making. It's the 5 minute one. The 5 minute that I've managed to accumulate with time, with that discipline and a focus of just using every few minutes. I think I've repeated this before, but it says in the Chumash, one of the things it tells us about Abraham and Sarah, Abraham and Sarah. It says, when Abraham Zaken Baba Yamim, Abraham was old and he came with his days. And on the surface, it appears to be a redundant expression. He was old and therefore he had a lot of days, so he was old. But we know that in Torah, every word is specific. Nothing is by chance. So the commentaries say, what is this? Abraham was old, coming with his days. And the answer they give is that old and coming with your days are two different things. A person can be old and not come with his days. In other words, you can have a lot of years, but not having accomplished something with those days. In the Torah, it tells us that Abraham was zaken, he was old, but he wasn't only old by the passport, he was old because Baba Yamim, he came with his days. Every day was accounted for, every day he could show something for, every day was meaningful, every day had a purpose, every day he had with him. It was like the wall calendar, not like the desk calendar. He had a tick after every day that he'd accomplished something. So that's the principles behind the sacredness of time and the desire to manage our time. It's not just a productivity thing, it's not just a practical thing. It's a value. Managing time properly is a value. It's a value of trying to make each day a meaningful day. Now, before I go into some practical, I need to mention something, because we always use a model in these sessions. We always use the Chesed and the Gevurah model, right? Now, for those who haven't been here in many of the sessions, I'll just quickly revise, but I know most of you are familiar with the Chesed and Gevurah, but essentially, we've divided personalities of people into the two primary emotions, and that's Chesed and Gevurah, which go back to the two primary forces with which God created the world. And essentially, Chesed is translated kindness, but it's not only kindness, as we know. Chesed is flexibility, connection, expansion, everything to do with going outwards and not having a border, not having a wall, everything to do with moving out and connection and relationship and love, compassion, flexibility, tolerance, even negative things like disorganization, all these things all have to do with Chesed, right? Gevurah, on the other hand, is contracting, it's withdrawing, it's putting things in a box, hiding, concealing, and which accounts for good things and bad things, good things like organization, good things like being reliable. I've said to you many times, if you want someone to go out of the way and pick you up 3 o'clock in the morning to take you to the airport, you ask a chesed person. If you want someone who is very flexible, if you want something done on time and you want a meeting attended punctually, you ask a guru person, right? Because each one has bad and good. Now, I want to just put it in the context of time management, because it would appear on the surface that the people who really need to learn time management are the chesed people. Those are the people that often struggle a lot with time management. Because managing our time effectively essentially means a certain discipline, and essentially it means sticking to schedules and being organized and putting things in boxes, prioritizing things in various compartments and departments, and therefore, very often that doesn't fit that well with a chesed type of personality. On the other hand, we have Gevurah people who have the personality of Gevurah, which many of them, often, a very good time manager is a Gevurah person. It's an organized person, person knows when to stop, a person who can shut out interruptions, can reject things that interfere, can stick to the parameters. But I don't want the Gevurah people not coming back next week, so that's why I wanted to share this with you. Okay? That would be a good way to say who's the chesed person, who's the Gevurah person, right? First of all, it's not as black and white, correct? We've talked about this many times. It has a lot of gray areas, and therefore, chesed and Gevurah overlap. But even if a person is a Gevurah person by extreme, and even if a person is a chesed person by extreme, both have time management challenges. And the reason I say that is this, and that's going to set the tone a little bit for what we're going to do. See, my sense is that the guy who wrote that book that I talked to you about before is a Gevurah person. He Yeah, he has no problem saying no. He has no problem being organized. He has no problem not being distracted. Being distracted, by the way, is a very chesed thing. You expand into anything and everything, right? But I don't know how good he is at building relationships. It doesn't talk anywhere in the book about his marriage, about his family life. And I suspect that there's problems, because that type of personality, if you go with an outside-in model, the time management becomes very focused on one area of life, on succeeding. That's one obsession, one focus. Managing time in the context of our discussion, which is managing time based on the foundation of the value of time, based on the foundation of becoming a better individual, managing time will also require both chesed and gevura. Those who are not so good at gevura are going to have to learn a lot of gevura, because it does take discipline. It does take learning how to stay within the schedule, learning how to stay within a task, learning how to be focused to the exclusion of other things. It takes a lot of gevura practices. But learning to be a time manager based on values and becoming a better person also requires an amazing amount of flexibility. Also requires an amazing amount of compassion. It requires an amazing amount of care and concern for relationship with other people, which is a chesed thing. And therefore, it should never be understood that good time management fits into a particular personality. It doesn't. It actually is one of those things, like all the things we've discussed, that requires both chesed and gvura. And we'll come back to that as we go along, because it will show you how that works in different areas of managing our time. So let's look at some practical foundations now for time management. Now, there's so many different areas of managing our time, and we can see just by a little list that we made in 30 seconds how there's so many different areas to explore and have a look at when we talk about the area of managing our time. But what I wanted to share with you in the last 15 minutes of what we're going to do is the foundation, I think, of time management. And it's a foundation which divides into three parts. And again, you'll see that it divides into three parts and requires some chesed aspects and some gevura aspects. And that issue is the issue of control. I think if we had to summarize and talk about what is the one foundation of managing our time effectively, it's the issue of control. But it's not just the issue of control, it's the issue of three areas of control that I want to share with you. The first area of control is just the normal, traditional area of self-control, that concept of discipline. And not everyone, by nature, by personality, are disciplined people. Discipline is a personality. It's something that we can all learn. Whether to be disciplined or not is something we choose. But it doesn't necessarily come naturally. It is the foundation for so many things. I've shared with you before that the very, very first failure of the human being was lack of self-control. The very, very first one. The sin of eating from the forbidden fruit was a prohibition that was given to Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, where they were told not to eat from a one tree. It's not like they were starving, you understand? Right? They had a multitude of trees to eat, multitude of fruit, they had lots to eat. But there was one particular tree or two particular trees that they weren't supposed to eat from. And we also learned that they weren't supposed to eat from those trees for 3 hours. It was Friday afternoon. And they were supposed to refrain from eating those. They were just, eat whatever you want, just don't go there. Right? You can go everywhere, just not there. For 3 hours. Had they controlled themselves for 3 hours and not eaten the fruit, the Talmud tells us Shabbat would have come in and they would have been permitted to eat the fruit and the whole course of history would have looked different. And they didn't. The very first failure of the human being was just lack of self-control. And the foundation to managing our days is the concept of self-control. Being disciplined. Right? It's something that takes a lot of practice. It's not something that someone who is a bit of an undisciplined person can suddenly become disciplined. Right? It's something that takes practice. And I would recommend that just that concept of discipline is something that we begin to practice, right? It's about, in the context of managing our time, it's about deciding that tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, I'm going to sit down and do something that I don't particularly like. It's a task that has to get done, whatever it is. Paying the bills, I don't know, whatever the task is, but filing away, which no one likes doing. It's a task that has to be done. I've been putting it off for the last 17 weeks. I know it's piling up. I know it has to get done. and I haven't done it because simply I don't want to do it. It's not like I'm a lazy person, because I can do lots of things. Just I do the things that I like, that's all. Right? Laziness, by the way, is a most times the word laziness is misused. It's got nothing to do with laziness. It sometimes does. Laziness is a personality, but very, very often people don't get things done. It's got absolutely nothing to do with laziness, because they're not lazy people. Watch them. They do things all day that they love doing, and they work very hard at it. Right? Kids, adults, anyone. It's just that it's more of an undisciplined behavior. It's nothing to do with laziness. Right? So sometimes we have to just start. We have to tell ourselves, there's something that I've been putting off. I will do it tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I will not do it for a long time because I know it won't work. I'll do it for 20 minutes, but I will do it come what may at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I will shut out everything else. I will not be distracted. I will try and focus for 20 minutes and do that task that I didn't want to do. That's the way to learn discipline, to start this process, because discipline and self-control is the foundation of effective time management. It teaches us how to engage in things we need to engage in, but it also teaches us how to let go of those things that are distracting us. It's two things. There's a verse in Psalms that talks about Sur Merav Aseh Tov, and it talks about morality. It says one has to go away from what is negative and engage in that which is positive. And it's two opposite ends of the spectrum, and they both need to be there. Being disciplined means I will do that task tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, even though I don't want to do it, and I will not do anything else. In other words, it's a training how to not do the things that are standing in the way or trying to interfere with what I'm supposed to be doing. The second is who controls what? What do I mean? The second thing, and this is an issue which is particularly relevant in our modern times. I'm going to share with you a personal struggle with this, but this is the issue. Today we live in a world of technology, which technology brings us many, many wonderful tools, really wonderful tools, that make us more efficient, that definitely can increase our productivity, that can help us get organized, that can help us stay in touch with people that perhaps we weren't able to stay in touch with otherwise. You know, just an example, most of you would know what WhatsApp is, right? Yeah. WhatsApp, it's an instant messaging thing, which my kids have taught me how to use, right? As most things. So, you know, we came back from the wedding. Now, of course, leaving children overseas is never an easy thing, but that's what it is, and thank God they're happy, and that's the way life goes. But it's definitely, I remember when I went away to yeshiva when I was 18, from South Africa, we used to write aerograms, you know. Which have some value, by the way, which we've lost, but anyway, the contact was very, very limited. I spoke to my parents very seldom. When I could find, once in a while, when I could find a payphone and make a collect call, that's when I used to speak to them, right? And the line wasn't very clear. Today, calling is cheap, and you don't have to call. So the other day, it was just amazing. My one daughter and son-in-law were in South Africa visiting. My son had just got married, and his new wife were in Chicago. We were here, and I was in the office. And suddenly I notice on WhatsApp there's this whole conversation that's going on. An amazing conversation. Different time zones, different place. Everyone is talking to each other and they're having the most wonderful conversation and bonding. Not as good as you do in person, but bonding virtually. So it's an amazing thing, right? I know myself, I've recently got an iPad and you have lists and tasks and all kinds of amazing tools, filing systems, and it's incredible. But it's also very destructive. And when do you know if something is destructive or something is constructive? There's a very simple formula. In fact, it's a formula that doesn't only apply to technology, it applies to everything in life. It applies to emotions. And the formula is one simple question that we have to ask ourselves. Do I control the thing, or does the thing control me? This, by the way, this works with everything. Everything that's good, it works with. I'll give you an example. I'm sure I've given this once in the past, but the idea of guilt. Is guilt a bad thing or a good thing? So it depends what the connotation is. But guilt actually is a good thing. Do you know that? Guilt is a fantastic thing. If we ever felt guilty, we'd never grow. If we never felt uncomfortable about what we've done, we'd never fix. If we never felt a little bit uneasy about stuff, about relationship damaging that we've perhaps caused, we would never apologize, we would never grow, we'd never go out of our comfort zone. The step The one step, we know that the Maimonides talks about it, the laws of tshuva, the laws of repentance around the times of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and he says that tshuva has steps. And the first step to repentance is charata, which means remorse, feeling bad about what we've done. And yet we always talk about how guilt can be so destructive and it can destroy a person and to live in guilt, and Jews suffer from Jewish guilt and Jewish mothers suffer from it even more and all this kind of stuff, right? And the answer is, the solution is very simple. Guilt is a fantastic thing. Depends when. Depends who controls what. Do you control the guilt, or does the guilt control you? In other words, there's nothing to do with time management, just a good formula altogether, right? Shnei Zalman of Ladin, his book of the Tanya, says that guilt is a good thing provided you control it. He talks about the concept of having designated times to be guilty. In other words, if you... Yeah, seriously. In other words, if you've done something... There are times where we have to reflect on the day, on the month, or the year. We have to highlight strengths, but we also have to highlight weaknesses. That's part of growth. And we have to highlight weaknesses and feel uncomfortable. And then move on. In other words, guilt is a fantastic thing when I invite the guilt in as a guest to help me grow. Not when the guilt lives it in me and controls me. As soon as the guilt comes and invades you and starts to control you, it's finished, it's over, it becomes a destructive tool. So you have the very same emotion that can be unbelievable, it can be the tool and the catalyst for growth, and it can also be your very destruction. And the very same thing applies to technology. It applies to mobile phones, it applies to iPads, it applies to anything that we use today that is technological based. It can help you manage your time, it can help you be productive, and it can help you fall into all these terrible things. It can make you fatigued, it can make you distracted, it can destroy you, it can waste your day. You can, because of technology, you can come at the end of the day and having done absolutely nothing. Why? Because the person that happens to is a person that doesn't control the technology controls them. And one of the hardest things in life generally, and it applies in the area of technology as well, is to let go. I recently started something. This is not confession time, but I'll share with you anytime. I don't mind. I'm not perfect, by the way, just in case you didn't know. I have this problem because if I'm sitting with someone and my mobile phone goes, I don't know, I'm sure it comes from ego, but it must be like the person must, I must talk to the person now. I mean, what will be if I call a person back in an hour? Can you imagine the devastation and the destruction that can happen in the next hour if I don't get put back? I mean, it's crazy, but that's the way, that's the way we do it. Like, I have to just talk this 1 second, or yeah. So I've recently started a discipline, a practice, and you can try it too. That's your homework for the week if you suffer from this problem like I do. Right? Where every single day for an hour, and I designate the hour what I'm doing. You know what airplane mode is?
Yeah.
Right. So I turn my mobile to an airplane mode. I don't turn it off, God forbid, because I'm sure there's some technology that I'm going to need an hour, my diary or my list or whatever the case is. But I turn it to airplane mode. And I discovered an amazing thing. The world is still standing. Imagine that. The world actually existed without me. And yes, when I turn it back after the hour, maybe, sometimes it's surprisingly, there's actually no phone calls, nothing missed. Sometimes there is. There can be 6 messages, 10 emails, whatever the case is. And it all will get answered on their time. But it's just a discipline. It's nothing to do with organization. It's the foundation of this is a discipline. It's actually who controls what. And when I started to realize that I'm getting very fascinated with all this technology, but it's starting to creep in and it's starting to control me rather than I control it, that's when you have to stop. You have to say, no, it's not going to work. So the second part about it is, the second practical tip is, second part of control is to actually not let the things that shouldn't control us control us. In other words, the first is self-control, but the second is to control ourselves. As we know, we can only control ourselves. But what we shouldn't do is we shouldn't let those things that could control us and interfere with our growth and interfere with our effective time management do that to us. And therefore, as a second tip, we need to engage in that discipline. Try it for an hour a day, whether it's mealtime. I mean, mealtime is a thing which is unbelievable. People sit with their families and answer phones. It's a ridiculous thing. Thank God I'm not challenged that way so much. But I mean, I've seen it happen when people sit in restaurants and socialize and answer my phone. Like, it's a waste of money. What did you go to the restaurant for? I mean, you could have eaten a salad at home, right? Choose an hour every day where you just don't answer any phone. It's actually a wonderful thing. You'll
The good thing that someone told us to do is when you go out for dinner with your friends, everybody must put their mobiles in the middle of the phone. And whoever reaches for their mobile first has to pay for the meal.
Love it. That's fantastic. But I want to just add to that, it's not only a social thing. You see, it's not only a social thing, right? It's not only that when we socialize with other people, it's also with ourselves. Besides doing it in a social setting, whether it's meals with your family in a restaurant, try it also with yourself. Try do something, try focus on an activity, whatever you're going to do, and say for the next half an hour, I'm actually not going to answer the phone. I'm going to turn it off, and then turn it on afterwards. And very quickly, because we're running out of time, the third issue of control is self-control in the reverse. Meaning self-control when things, see, because as we begin, this is where the chesed and gevurah thing comes in. When we start to get better at time management, we start to get more disciplined, we start to get our day more organized, we will then start to become more frustrated when it doesn't work out. And that's where the reverse control is and the chesed part of time management comes in. That we need to train ourselves that we have to be responsible human beings. We have to plan our day the most responsible way we could, but we don't run the world. Understanding God's control. And therefore, things don't always work out. And part of the discipline of self-control is the art of learning to readjust. The most disappointing thing for a person who manages their time very badly, if the day doesn't work out, they don't care, because nothing was going right anyways. In fact, nothing was even planned to go right, so it doesn't matter. But for someone who gets really good at time management and has systems and prioritizes and knows this time they're going to do that and that time they're going to do that and have a schedule, and then suddenly something unexpected comes in that we couldn't control, we fall apart. And the third foundation of time management is to learn that chesed art of being flexible. Of learning the art of managing our time effectively, but then learning the art to understand that we're not in control, God is in control, and then learning how to very quickly readjust. And it's something we're going to explore a lot more in the coming weeks together with all of these ideas. So that's the foundation, and hopefully the next few weeks we'll develop it in greater detail. Can I just have you for one more second? Sorry? What is it? Someone? A G? Oh, okay. I have to mention one thing very, very quickly, and it's not my preferred thing to start the year with, but I think it's important nonetheless. Some of you might have noticed different signs that we have around with the Sync brand. And one of the things we also with the Sync brand is this new thing. This is not a suggestion box, it's actually a money box. It's a pushka. And I wanted to just highlight, I mean, we've had those little ones around the place, but we have these ones and some of the big ones will go up all over the place. And the purpose of putting out together with a sign is just to highlight the fact that, you know, we never ever, and we've had this discussion many times, we will never turn away anyone from learning, but as you know, Binah has a big, big budget, and we have various fundraisers throughout the year, which do well, but are not enough. And although we don't charge at the door, but we wanted to highlight the fact that if you are coming and are enjoying, if you want to contribute on a weekly basis, that would be an encouraged thing to do, and a great thing to do, and you could do it there. Whatever you can, if you can't, then you can't, but if you could, here it is. Have a wonderful week.